To start talking.
Okay, and you're live. Can you hear yourself?
Yeah, I can hear myself. Great. Yeah, this will be good. Okay. I'll just get going.
All right, you take care. I'll see you.
Okay, yeah. I wanted to first make a correction from yesterday's conversation, and I want to be absolutely clear on this issue, and then the right amount is also stated. Yesterday, we talked about the windfall of Navajo revenues during the year after we won the case in the United States Supreme Court. And I think I used the figure $214 million was the amount that we realized as an extra money coming into the Navajo Treasury. Last night I checked my record, it's $217, so it's a lot better than what I thought. 217 is the number and the figure that we should use. And the second correction is that as a result of two things that we did is how we recognize and realize the additional revenue. Number one, of course, is what I talked about yesterday, which is the United States Supreme Court case. And the second one was the renegotiation of mineral leases, such as coal, timbers, lease on land, and right-of-ways, oil and gas, natural gas, all of those things during the previous administration, they were at an impasse on the renegotiation of those leases through Navajo land, the use of the land by outside companies. Well, when I came in, I made that my number one priority, realizing that that's going to generate new revenues. And so putting all of that together, the Supreme Court case and the renewal of these leases is what brought about the $217 million. And those $217 million was in addition to what the general revenue was for the year for the tribal government. And so I just wanted to make that correction. And then I also want to continue with what I was talking about in the area of education. And so I'll stop here just for 1 minute.
Sorry.
Traffic, huh?
No, it's more trying to do four things at the same time and not. Sort of getting it all messed up.
We're doing okay.
I'm not worried about you.
Our man was here, so he says, just go ahead and get going.
Yeah, good. Please.
So what I'll do is I'll just talk about education now.
Mm-hmm.
And then what I thought we should do, Peter, is go from here, because my voice keeps on like yesterday.
Yes.
Go from here to 12:30. And then at 12:30, let's see.
Sure.
Let's see how it is. And we may just go to one and then just
That's cut it. Whatever you want, it's fine.
Okay.
Do you want me to, I'll just be, kind of listening and taking notes, and then we can have sort of a discussion after you're done with that. Is that what you'd prefer?
Yeah.
I think so, because otherwise I kind of interrupt your train of thought and stuff. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Continuation on education. Some of the things that I observed during my lifetime in looking at the operation of the federal government in terms of Indian education is that on the Navajo, it was very, very intriguing to me what was going on right about this time. Upon graduation from ASU, going back into Navajo Nation and becoming involved at the Window Rock High School, first as a teacher, and then secondly becoming a member of the Board of Trustees for Window Rock High School. And then all of the problems that I saw and heard as a member of the Board of Trustees, and then what we were trying to do to improve the facilities as well as the teaching and the curriculum and the overall education of the Navajo young people in that community. And Window Rock High School was one of the very few first institutions on the Navajo. And as a result of the success at Window Rock High School, there came about subsequently the other institutions of higher learning, such as Navajo Community College and all the other Indian colleges throughout the nation. And so I wanted to just express that and then express my opinion about what was happening. The way I saw from a distance as an objective viewer on Indian education was that the United States wanted to educate the Indian people, Indian students, as fast as they can and try to have them assimilate to their way of thinking. And they use all kinds of tactics, some questionable tactics and unethical tactics, to try to bring the American Indian people to the mainstream of American society and have them begin believing in the system that they believe in. And that was something that was so obvious for me to see in terms of what the federal government was trying to do. And one of the ways to do that was to establish what they call boarding schools off reservation. Excuse me. boarding schools off the reservation. So they established these boarding schools. I think a couple of them in Oklahoma, some in California, some in Utah, one here in the state of Arizona. And they got all of the Indian students off reservation that were of school age and put them at these boarding school institutions. And the whole idea was to educate them so that they know the basic things, reading, writing, arithmetic, and the care of the a home life, and learning some trade, whether that's carpentry work or plumbing, painting, all of that, that they thought that Indian people really need to get ahead and to begin living in American society. And so basically that's what the boarding schools were teaching. And there were none of what I would call cultural classes geared towards Indian beliefs, Indian culture, Indian language, lifestyle, history, and all of that. There was really none of that. It was all learning the American way, learning the American system. And I guess the federal government was hoping that if we have these boarding schools in a major metropolitan area like Phoenix and Salt Lake City and Los Angeles, that ultimately the Indian students would graduate from those high school and they would just eventually remain there in those cities. And so basically that's that was the mentality of the federal government during that time. And that happened for several years, that mentality was driven by trying to assimilate the American Indian young people. Of course, what a better way to change the lifestyle of American Indian to go at the youngsters, the children of Indian elderly. And so I guess at the end of a certain period, they then evaluated the boarding schools, and the students at the boarding schools then began questioning. Sometimes in the mid-1950s, they began questioning the tactics that the federal government was using. And I remember all of the problems at Intermountain Indian School in Utah, and what the students were saying, what they were doing. They were protesting some of the tactics that the federal government boarding schools were using. Even in my own school here at Phoenix Indian School, in my senior year, there were a lot of unrest. They were questioning the tactics of the federal government, And remember, we had to go demonstrate against the administration for doing what we thought was unethical in many cases, and then not having the school be conducive to learning new things and to gain knowledge and be completely educated. They were failing in those areas, and so we had to put on a little student demonstrations to have the administration improve on that. And so there were a lot of unrest during this period. And the United States Senate then got a hold of what was happening. And I believe it was people like Robert Kennedy and others of his party, the Democratic Party, began questioning some of the things that were going on at the boarding schools. And on the Navajo, there was the Marion Report that was produced, how many of the Navajo students of school age that were not going to school, and that they should be in school, but they weren't, and many of them were overage, and I happened to be one of those individuals that started out late in school when I was 9 years old. And so when I came to Phoenix, I was put into a Navajo special program. And there I had to accelerate and go at a faster pace than most students to get into high school. But many of the students didn't meet that challenge. I was lucky, extremely lucky, to have good teachers and that tutored me through that process, and thereby ended up in a high school at Phoenix, Indian School. And so basically that was what was happening during that period. And then because of the involvement of the United States government at the Senate level and at congressional level, there were these various hearings, various investigation that was done by the federal government to really decide where we stand on those kinds of issues. And then there came about a gradual transformation from Indian boarding school into beginning to build schools on reservation close to the parents in Indian communities where the Indian people live. And as a result, on the Navajo, there were a lot of public schools that were built, and then on Apache Reservation in St. Carlos, and then in White Mountain, and then a lot of the other local tribes, they built those local schools to try to encourage parents to enroll their children there locally, and then began teaching the parents about how to control schools. And as a result of all of that movement during that time, people like the late Bob Russell then got involved with the federal program and started promoting a local control of school by Navajo parents. And he established such an institution at Rough Rock where that there would be a community school completely controlled by the Navajo people. Where it would be completely controlled by the Navajo people. They would become school board members, and ultimately when they are ready and getting their education, they would ultimately be responsible as superintendents and as principal of those schools. And Rough Rock was a pioneer in that category. And they decided that what they should simply do is try to get the money that BIA was using to educate the Navajo students in that community, except Bob changed that and just had the federal government give that money to the local school board that was incorporated as an educational institution and as a nonprofit corporate entity. And then they end up doing their own school and being able to put themselves in a position to have a lot of say-so as to what curriculum, what kind of teachers, and classes that were structured in such a way that they would concentrate very heavily on Navajo-ness, Navajo culture, Navajo history, language, and all of that would be taught by that school. And that was the beginning of Navajo or Indian-controlled schools of schools across the nation. And then all of these other schools throughout Indian country then start propping up design after what Rough Rock did. And then as that was happening, the public schools then also began doing some of the things that Rough Rock Demonstration School was able to do. And in the process of doing that, that was highly, highly successful by all indication through research and studies, either by the government or by the state government, by the tribal government. Every indication was that there was a tremendous amount of improvement. The students were very proud of themselves as Navajo Indians, in our case. And there were a lot of Indian parents, even though they didn't speak English and never had the opportunity to go to school before, they had their children situated.
I could turn it off.
They had their children situated where they were learning something about their culture, and that gave them a lot of pride, and the parents were happy. And of course, when you're happy, when you are in full control in the education of your own children, that's going to make you a happy parent, because you're now given assistance to the local school in terms of what the kids were learning. And so that was a big success throughout the nation. And then ultimately, the Navajo Nation wanted to transfer that idea over to the public school. And I believe it was at this point that we from the Navajo Nation started talking about education policy. Mm-hmm. And I was just extremely lucky to have the kind of council delegates that we had, like David Soce, who was the chairman of the education committee, bought into the idea, and we produced a Navajo education policy, which was a model at that time for all the other Indian tribes in the United States to follow, and use it as an example in the process of taking control of their own schools by the tribal government. And the tribal government had finally spoke in terms of what they believe in terms of the education of their own children. And this was something that took place. Now, when we were trying to transfer the same Rough Rock idea and the successes over to the public school, there was a lot of resistance from the public schools. And I remember going to several of those school board meetings where the superintendent would rise to be heard, and one of the things that they almost always said was that if the Navajo Nation government wants to get involved in the education, then they have to produce some money, make some money available so that we can teach a lot of the things that they're mandating us to do. Because the education policy says that Navajo kids have to learn Navajo language, that Navajo kids should be taught the history of the Navajo tribe, the Navajo Nation, and that all these kinds of things that make them who they are, a proud Navajo youngsters, that all of that should be taught and made available at the school. Well, the school superintendents were indicating that they don't have the money to do that. And we kept on saying that, of course you do have the money to do that. And it was just a matter of a desire by you and a desire by the school board to go ahead and enhance the tradition of the Navajo people. And so there was a tug of war that went on between the Navajo Nation government and local schools. And we could never get together on the agreement between the two parties as to what responsibilities we had and what responsibilities that they had to teach this new thing that we had mandated the schools to do. And unfortunately, that kind, those kinds of situations last more than 4 years. And so I just had that little shadow of opportunity for about 4 years to promote that. And other people that came after me were the ones that had to deal with that also. We'll take a little break.
Okay.
Sorry to interrupt you, too.
No, no. That,
I just want to make sure you
need to,
okay.
We need to turn the power off now, right? Or
oh, you don't have to. You can just let it go.
Okay.
Just, it'll
all right,
just
that makes it easier.
A minute.
Yeah. Yeah, I ran late this morning, and I just, it's one of those mornings where you want somehow to be able to divide yourself in four parts and go in four different directions.
But it just doesn't work.
No, not even if your birthday is 4/4/44. You still, you don't get much help from that. Yeah.
Well, I just wanted to say hi.
Thank
I'm
you.
I'm heading out to lunch about 11:30, mm-hmm. and I'm not really sure if I'll be back before you all leave, because yeah. Matt said you were going to leave around 1 today.
Well, it depends a little on Dr. Zah's voice.
Okay.
He's been using it rather extensively.
That's a lot.
Yeah, yesterday.
It was a lot.
Yeah. But what we're going to do is probably around a little after 12, hour from now, we'll uh-huh. stop, and then Peter's going to ask questions, and we'll
okay.
go over that.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, sounds good. Well, if I'm not around, just call Matt, and he'll take care of everything.
Good.
And then if I am, then I will. Yeah. And I heard you're not coming in on Friday, so we won't set anything up.
Yeah.
Okay. But he's been making noises about doing another session pretty soon.
Okay.
Yeah. Right? Weren't we talking about one, I don't know, sometime before too long?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, just let me know. I'm going to be out of town a little bit in July, but Matt's around, and between the two of us, we'll get it taken care of.
Thank you.
All right.
We're off to a good start.
All right, good.
Thank you, Joyce.
Thanks,
Peter. Yeah, you take care. Okay.
Okay.
So, essentially, the education policy of the Navajo Nation served its purpose during that period of time. And I, as the chairman of the Navajo Nation, did what I had to do. To help produce the Navajo education policy. We knew all along that that education policy had to be updated every so often to be in line with the community's wishes. And very recently, the Navajo Education saw fit to do that, and they passed another act to strengthen the original Navajo Nation policy. And I think at some point I'll have to devote some time to discussing that more specifically.
Sure.
But for the time being, if you look at the national level and then contrasting that with the Navajo, mm-hmm. I think what was happening on the Navajo, which was a little different than what was happening at the national level, was that many of the new things in Indian education was really spearheaded, and we as a Navajo Nation and as a trailblazers in Indian education had to produce what we did. And then at the same time, prove what we were doing to be successful. In other words, if you look at what happened at Rough Rock, the original name that was attached to that experimental program was a demonstration school, Rough Rock Demonstration mm-hmm. School. And it was put in place to demonstrate to the federal government and to other people that, yes, these kinds of innovation, new innovation could be successful. But the federal government, all the other people, didn't buy into it initially. They wanted a proof. They wanted a proof, and they wanted some kind of a demonstration project to demonstrate to them that this kind of education, our own way of educating our own children, could be successful. And so all these years that it was given that title, I think Rough Rock did a very good job of demonstrating to the powers at hand, whether that's locally or at the national level, that It demonstrated the success of parental involvement and Indian control of education. And so Navajo is always in the forefront of showing to the federal government and other entities that we're able, we're capable of taking taking care of our own education and our own affairs. And so basically, the way I see it is that that's what really happened. And we as tribal leaders, we came alone, and all we did is strengthen what was happening. All we did was support what was happening in a local community. And that's at least how I saw my role as a chairman of the Navajo Nation. Okay. You want to turn it off a little?
Sure.
Turn it off
a little bit. Let's see.